Good morning. Welcome to Jay's Talk Plus. Happy Monday. Busy one. It is a little Raptors housekeeping note first, by the way. It is NBA draft lottery day. This is sometimes the time slot for the Raptors show. Today, I'll have a Raptors show 7 to 8 p.m. We'll carry the draft lottery live. I'll react to that. And how's this for maybe a sign of good luck and good fortune to come? It's also the anniversary of the shot. Shout out to Matt Devlin sharing that, sharing his call of the big Kawhi shot in Game 7 against the 76ers on social media. So I don't know if you were going to pick a day for draft lottery to fall on. The day of the single greatest shot in Raptors history, probably high on the list of days you pick.
That's such a nice way to start your Monday, Blake. I love it.
Better than the way we dealt with our Sunday, which was a terrible loss for the Leafs at the hands of the Panthers. I'm talking, of course, about the IBL Leafs who lost to the Kitchener Panthers. Our pal, Ayami Sato, though, two perfect innings in her debut in the IBL. You were down there. How was it?
Yeah, it was great. Super effective. You could really see everything was working for her. The mechanics. I love watching Japanese pitchers. Japanese baseball in general, it's so much fun. And, you know, everything was on point. She was locked in. She was fired up after that first inning, too. Comes back for the second, gets a K, her first K as a Maple Leaf. Crowd was amazing. It was a beautiful day for a ball game. Ran into so many people, so many friends that I've made in this industry. Honestly, it was great. It was kind of heartbreaking that then we had to go home and watch the hockey Maple Leafs do what they did and sort of, you know, I don't want to say that they disappeared in that game, but it was pretty close to it. So kind of ending on a low note, but overall, very, very good weekend. Very good Mother's Day.
Yeah, very good weekend. Oh, yeah, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Jamie Campbell gave my mom a shout-out on Blue Jay Central.
Nice.
And then my mom missed it. Way to go, Mom.
I guess
she didn't want to spend the middle of her Sunday afternoon on Mother's Day watching the Blue Jays pregame. What the heck? Yeah, fun weekend all around. Lots of good sports stuff. Lots of good Toronto Blue Jays. Yeah. Action. The Jays swept the Seattle Mariners. They won 6-3 Friday, 6-3 Saturday, and 9-1 on Sunday. If those sound like really large numbers to you, you've been a Blue Jays fan for a little bit. This is the so they scored 29 runs over the last four games. They're on a four-game winning streak that's gotten them back to 500. It's the first time they've swept Seattle in a series that wasn't a two-game series in Seattle since 1991. Seattle had obviously won nine series in a row coming into this one. They were the hottest team in the American League. So a lot of good there. That was a season-high nine runs. The 29 runs over four games is something they didn't do at all last season.
That's really telling.
Yes. Four straight games with five runs or more is something they didn't do at all last season. They've had 10 hits or more in five consecutive games. Look, there's still a lot of work to do. They've gotten all the way up to 22nd in the league in runs per game now. Four games isn't going to fix everything. But at least for four games, and especially the weekend series, which, by the way, they played without Anthony Santander, who is day-to-day with a left shoulder thing after taking a dip into the crowd in the last game against the Angels, which should have been fan interference, by the way. It didn't end up consequential other than his shoulder. They did this without Andrés Giménez, who hit the IL, Michael Stefanik, up for Friday's game, which we didn't know. We had an idea, but it wasn't official when we did the show Friday. Yeah. They did it without Dalton Varsho yesterday for a shoulder maintenance day. Couple innings without Alejandro Kirk as he took a backswing from Julio Rodriguez off the ear and was dealing with some ear discomfort. Hopefully he's okay after the off day today. So really good stuff. Hottest team in baseball, thinned out lineup, best four-game stretch you've had offensively since late 2023.
Yeah,
I'd be feeling all right today.
Yeah, certainly a good sign, right, Blake? I think you and I have also talked a lot about not getting too carried away, not getting to expect, you know, the world now. These things come and go, and the Blue Jays have definitely been on the wrong side of, you know, inconsistent here. We've seen these hot stretches kind of come and go, but I will say that this series felt a little bit different because it did look like everything was clicking to a certain degree, which is also something we have spoken about in saying, okay, well, you know, we have heard a lot about three round wheels and one square wheel, and the fact that, you know, when one thing goes well, it seems like there's a huge drop in another area. The rotation is going well, the bats aren't showing up, and then the rotation kind of disappears and the bats do just enough to lose by one run or things like that. The bullpen has been so good, and then there's a step back there. And in this series, it did feel like everything sort of came together a little bit more, which was a good sign. But they're 20-20, right? We cannot forget where the Blue Jays are. There's a lot of work to be done still.
There is. And there are, because this is the worst year in the AL East we've seen in a long time, they're only three games back in the division. Yeah. It's too early to worry quite about the playoff race. But to contextualize that, the 20-20 start really didn't get them that far behind the eight ball. They're much closer than they were this time each of the last couple years. But a lot of work to be done now. Having said that, when you enter the week 16-20, 20-20 is the best possible outcome today.
Yeah,
so
great.
We'll have to balance that. So none of the positives that come mean the work is done. Like I said, they're still 22nd in runs per game. They maybe had a little bit of fortune here and there, or, you know, we're not far removed from the bullpen being overworked. That's a side thing, by the way. Those four wins came with two appearances from Jeff Hoffman and only one each from Chad Green, Jimmy Garcia, and Brandon Little. A-plus for how you got through those four games without having to tax the bullpen. You got Braden Fisher, low leverage debut. You got guys getting, hey, just get some work in because we haven't needed you in leverage for a little bit. Pretty good stuff on the bull and an off day today. So you're going to head into that Rays series against a fairly mediocre Rays team with your bullpen the freshest it's been since opening day, probably.
It's funny because with the way that the Angels series went, make it make sense, right? That the Angels series went as it did, and we saw so many heartbreaking moments in that set where they did have their high leverage guys on, and you know, the bats were kind of sort of producing, but not really being able to create that separation. And then you enter a series against the hottest team in the AL, probably at that period, nine series in a row that the Mariners had won. And that is when the Blue Jays sort of chose to wake up. And it was really awesome to watch just how much they could tack on, especially in that last game there. I still say that this is a little bit of a George Springer effect here. He's been so good and he's been so consistent. And Bryce Miller was not at his best. He hasn't been at his best all year. But when you throw a 92-mile-an-hour fastball, middle, George Springer right now with the way that he's locked in, he's not going to miss that.
Nope.
He is not going to miss it. And so
we saw it in the Angels series, too. He got an 0-0. Here's 87 on a dish. And he pummeled it.
And he's enjoying it, too, right? You hear his comments post-game and the way that he talks about the Blue Jays, the way that he talks about the team. I love this team. We are clicking. We're tightly knit. That matters, right? It matters because when you have a guy like that leading the way, and he's been so unselfish, and he's not looking to do too much, and if he is presented with the opportunity to walk three times in a game, he'll take those three walks and not try to force the issue.
Heads up base running, too.
100%. So everything that is going on right now is kind of just a, you know, you look at what George Springer is doing, you have a clear model, and especially for the bottom of the lineup, honestly, not trying to do too much, just taking what is given. I also think that that's a big part of why the Blue Jays did so well in this Mariners series. A ton of contributions from those bottom lineup guys, and they weren't trying to do too much.
Some of them who were bottom lineup guys, and then by the end of the series, they were top of lineup guys. We'll get to Addison Barger in a second. But on George Springer, yeah, you laid it out perfectly there. We talked about it a little bit Friday, how he's been the one guy who's kind of the guiding light. If you're looking for how to contribute, how to stay within yourself or you know, stay within what the pitcher's giving you with his approach and things like that, the walk rate, I laid it out, you know, it's double where it was the last couple of years. You know, way higher than it's been at any point in his career. And yeah, we're seeing more strikeouts, but it's with an intention
for sure
to it. Yeah, and a couple of really heads up base running plays on the weekend where like he's not a burner anymore at this point, but he is a very, very smart base runner. And that goes beyond just the six stolen bases. It's going first to third on a ball maybe you shouldn't. It's recognizing when a right fielder's maybe napping a little bit on a little flare and you could take an extra 90 feet. He went 4-for-16 over the last four games. But of those four hits, one was a homer, one was a double. He also had four walks on top of that. He scored seven runs over those four games. We've had stretches where the Blue Jays didn't score seven runs over four games. So that's a lot of fun. You mentioned the bottom of the lineup, yep. And I made that jokey pivot. Not a joke. Addison Barger hit third yesterday with Dalton Varsho, Anthony Santander, and Andrés Giménez all down and already on the mound. The Blue Jays bumped Addison Barger to third in the lineup. He has had an incredible couple of games, and we've seen the glimpses, right? There was the game when Seattle was here on the Friday night where he had three outfield assists playing in right field. We've seen him play third base, and on his throws, by the time the ball gets to Vlad, it's still got zip, and Vlad kind of like double looks at his glove, like when you hit a catcher's mitt at 100 or something like that. And we've seen these big swings with big exit velocities that were going into gloves or infield pop-ups where you watch on the replay and he just missed it. And we talked a lot last week about what the level of patience should be and needed to be, because the upside is tantalizing. And it's not as if Alan Roden or Will Wagner or Davis Schneider or even Ernie Clement until the last couple games were making a great case to take Barger's playing time. So how patient could you be? How close did you really think he was? And boy, the last four games, he has absolutely rewarded that patience.
I have to say, I have been very quiet about Addison Barger because I wasn't totally convinced that this patience was warranted. You mentioned the pop-ups, and yes, a couple of times it was, you know, he just missed. But we also saw some pretty ill-advised at-bats early on, especially. And you could kind of see that maybe he was losing patience with himself a little bit. Maybe he was pressing a little bit, as was the rest of the Blue Jays lineup. But when a guy with that much upside, which, by the way, great use of the word tantalizing. I love that you snuck that in there. But I wasn't so sure, Blake, that this was just about bad luck and staying patient. He proved me wrong, and I'm so glad that I stayed quiet until now about this, because, yeah, this is who Addison Barger can be. I don't expect him to hit three doubles in a game forever. That's a lot to ask, especially from a young guy who has yet to really see, you know, a full major league season at this point. But if he can continue to produce like that, and more importantly, just put together the at-bats that he has put together, again, a guy that's not trying to do too much, although that homer was... That swing was something.
It's so interesting because, like, you look at what he is and isn't swinging at, and if all you knew was, like, his chase rate and his whiff rate, you'd be like, yeah, this guy isn't trying to do too much. He's really not, especially for a guy with this type of profile where it's big monster exit velocities and stuff. So if you just looked at what he's swinging at and his swing decisions, things like that, he barely ever chases outside of the zone relative to the league. He's about average for swing and miss rate, which, again, with that big a swing... Yeah. You accept, you'd be like, yeah, he's not trying to do too much at all. And then you see him physically swing. It's like he is trying to put the ball through the right field seats. Like, if you are a fan in right field, he wants to hurt you. Yeah. That's how big the swing is and how hard the ball comes off the bat. It's pretty incredible. He doesn't have enough plate appearances to qualify for the leaderboards. But if he did, he would be, I think, third in average exit velocity. You're up there with the O'Neill Cruz, Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., of the world. Vlad is the only guy on the team with comparable exit velocities to him. And exit velocity isn't everything. Obviously, we've talked for years about guys who have this gap between, you know, the quality of contact they're making and what actually drops for a hit. But again, his sample is pretty small in terms of actual plate appearances. So to see it all start to come around, 7-for-17 over the last four games, three of those being doubles, a homer, also took a couple walks, 6 RBI over that four-game stretch as well. Really good to see. And yeah, to your point, I'm not expecting three doubles every game. I'm expecting three doubles only against righties.
Right.
And against lefties, I'll settle for one or two.
Okay. So there goes not asking too much of the youngster. Yeah. No, but, you know, you even hear John Schneider talk, Addy needs to play. Yes, he needs to play. What we're seeing right now is just a guy who's getting his chance and really getting the opportunity to put together consistent at bats and play multiple games in a row and get comfortable at third base and get comfortable at the plate at the major league level. It's not something that he necessarily had a ton of even last year when he really, really struggled at the major league level. Yeah, he's making the most of this extended opportunity. And boy, did the Blue Jays need an actual power bat in that lineup. And it's only fair that he would bat third with Varsho out of the lineup, right? And Santander as well.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, the playing time that he needs. Well, they're about to face a Rays team that only has right-handed starters and a Tigers team that, if they stay on turn, they'll miss Tarek Skubal. So it's all fantastic righties unless – so they've got a hole in their rotation. Maybe they start Tyler Holton one day or something like that, and they do the funky 2024 Tigers thing where, like,
chaos.
Here's 38 different guys and they're all sick. But it looks like we're headed into another week where they're going to face mostly, if not entirely, righty starters. So runway here for Barger to keep that momentum going. Don't imagine he'll hit third when, you know, guys are back. It's just – it's asking a lot of him.
For sure.
But really encouraging to see – and I've liked the defense fine at third base. Like, I know there are question marks about, you know, the overall profile at third base or in right field outside of the arm, but I think he's looked pretty comfortable there. So good for him.
Yeah.
Really good to see.
Yeah. I mean, I still trust Ernie Clement defensively more than I do Addison Barger, but when it comes to the bat,
yeah,
it's really... There's no question right now.
And Ernie Clement's at second base. So
right on. Yeah. For now, this question kind of resolves itself. But yeah, and even Clement kind of started to turn things around a little bit, looking a little bit more like the contact guy that we saw.
8 for 16 over that 4-game stretch, even took a walk, stole a base. He has 10 hits in his last 6 games, and they've all been singles except the one double against the Angels that he pulled down the left field line. But he's got that average back to .267 now. It's not where he needs to be, obviously, but we saw a couple good plays at second base over the stretch since Jimenez has went down. This was back in the Angels series, but that nice bare hander off the glove of Bassett, smart base runner. So, yeah, nice to see Ernie Clement, not just because it's good to see a guy, you know, turn the corner and see more hits drop in, but also because with Jimenez on the IL, even with Stefanik up, you know, this is a team that at least at the high levels is a little thin on infielders who you'd be super stoked to plug in. Aurelvis has started to come on a little bit at AAA, but not nearly to the level, and you'd really only want him playing against lefties at the major league level. David Schneider's been okay, but not, you know, not knocking on the door for a call back up.
Alan Roden has been pretty decent.
Can't play second base, though,
but he's not gonna. Yeah,
he's only played the corner. So if we're talking, you know, Jimenez, or if Santander needed an IL stint, you know, Roden has gone down and just absolutely raked.
Yeah.
Since he went down. A couple other quick positives. Mentioned Alejandro Kirk's injury yesterday, so he took a backswing off the ear. Hopefully he's okay, and, you know, whatever concussion protocols and things like that they have to go through. He was 5 for 11 over that stretch before he went down, hitting almost .400 over his last 12 games. So he's getting that batting line back up toward league average. He's also, you know, pretty strong underlying metrics. And then in terms of guys who have really strong underlying metrics and had a nice weekend, Bo Bichette had 5 hits, 4 walks. 2 of those hits were extra bases. His season line is now back above league average, which obviously is not the bar for Bo Bichette, but nice to see some progress there for Bichette as well.
Yeah, I'm still kind of shocked to see that his OPS is just 716, I think it is right now. It's a little surprising to me given how he has been swinging the bat.
But he went 63 games without a home run, though. It's hard to make up the slugging aspect of that, even with, you know, a walk-heavy week by his standards.
Yeah, and I guess we did see a ton of singles and not much else earlier in the season, and so that kind of also, you know, plays a factor into that. But I expect that number to rise, to climb, right? He has been swinging the bat like Bo Bichette, which is extremely encouraging. And that was an impressive homer, too. That was big.
It's the first time he's gone opposite field with a homer in years, literally years. And, you know, back when he was a 20-plus home run guy, he's not going to be a 29 home run guy in 2021. I think we could pretty safely call that an outlier. But 2022, 2023, when he was a 20 home run threat, you know, you want to see him using all fields with authority like that. So that's an encouraging one.
Yeah, I think, honestly, and he's been open about this too, it has taken him a little bit to just get back to his swing, really, and to get back to his body and to his mechanics. It's one thing to hit off the cage. It's one thing to, you know, play some spring training games. You get to major league regular season action. It's a different game. It's a different outlook. And so, yeah, I believe he's around 200 at bats or something like that, which is in spring training, which is what he kind of said that is what he needs to get back to himself fully. So, yeah, we are seeing the process of a guy just going back to who he is and finding his strengths again and finding the swing that works for him at any given time. We know that Bo Bichette has many mechanics, many swings, many loads. Everything is a little bit different every time he swings the bat. And with that, comes the opportunity to use the whole field and to drive a ball to the opposite side like he did, great. Now we're seeing Bo Bichette. Now we're seeing him get back to his full strength. And that is also extremely encouraging for the Blue Jays.
It is. It's great to see. And, okay, a couple other quick notes. Nathan Lucas had 5 hits and a pair of walks, including a home run. Vlad had 5 hits and 4 walks. No extra base hits, but, singles and walks, passing the baton. That is a lot of guys to go down the list and hit on positive 4-game stretches. Shocker. That's what happens when you score 29 runs over 4 games. On the pitching side, wasn't as gangbusters. Bowden Francis, I thought, struggled, but was at least able to be pitch efficient and give them length. 3 runs over 6 2/3 innings, you'll take that pretty much every time. It didn't look as good as that line, especially the early innings were pretty iffy there. But the ability to be, it's so funny, I don't actually mean this is what you should do, but like the mistakes came early in counts and they weren't big, hey, this is going to swell to a 30 pitch inning kind of thing. So he was able to give them length despite not having his best stuff. Kevin Gausman was just okay. And I know you were pretty encouraged by Bowden Francis being able to, after a couple of shorter outings, work through it and get into the 7th.
Yeah, I think that needs to be seen as a win considering how things were going for Francis. We know that he is at his best when he is confident and actually hitting his spots. He didn't hit all his spots in this outing, but by going a little bit farther into the game and by actually giving his team a chance to win, that's got to feel good. And when it comes to building your confidence back up, that's such a nice start. Now, we'll believe that this is who he is, or this is who he is back to being when he does it a few more times with a little bit more consistency, even than what we saw against the Mariners. Let's face it, the Mariners weren't swinging the bat at their best in this series. I think that
almost
the Blue
Jays, like they were due a little regression being the number 2 offense with,
Yeah, and I think even, when you look at what Urania and Lauer did, and I'm sure that we'll get into that in a bit, they did also get maybe a little bit lucky that the mistakes were not hit harder, that the mistakes didn't come at a higher leverage situation. And that's what Francis, encountered as well. Totally fine. They'll take the win and they'll take the length for sure. And now it's about looking at that with a little bit of added confidence. You can still do this. You can still get the outs at the major league level. That hasn't changed. And how do you adjust for your next start?
On the Urania and Lauer note, they kind of did. I talked about Thursday or Friday that given the Mariners makeup where they're a little lefty and switch heavier than the Angels who Urania had gone through, that maybe I'd consider starting Lauer, turn guys around, get the lesser bats into the lineup, and then use Urania. They ended up using Urania once through the order. And then Lauer came in and gave them bulk. They combined for 6 2/3 innings with only 1 earned run. Great result for an Urania-Lauer pairing. Lauer looked a little sharper. Urania had the changeup because if you're going righty to lefty, you're going to hammer that changeup. It was his number 1 pitch. Didn't locate it in the zone particularly well. Made the one mistake, but enough to give them once through the order, which is, hey, you signed this guy off the discard pile a week ago. You'll
Perfect.
Take that.
Yeah.
Eric Lauer looked a little sharper. This will come up again on Saturday against the Tigers. So we'll see. They obviously trusted Lauer for more times through the order. This is a Tigers team that is not hitting as well as the Mariners came into this one, but it's a pretty good Tigers team in general.
Well, let me ask you this then. There's still no update on Jake Bloss. Max Scherzer doesn't seem particularly close to returning. Easton Lucas is still in AAA, I guess.
He had an iffy one on Sunday. He had been a little better, but yeah, no one is knocking on the, like there's no, Spencer Turnbull hasn't even gotten into an FCL game yet. Macko's only gotten into one. The fact that we are a week plus removed from Jake Bloss taking himself out of a game with an elbow thing.
With no update?
Yes. Generally speaking, you don't get a second opinion if you like the first opinion. So that's a bit of a warning sign. My lean would be, especially because Urania didn't go super deep into that game.
Yeah.
My lean would be Urania available out of the bullpen if needed over the next couple days.
Okay.
The Tigers are really lefty heavy.
Okay.
So Eric Lauer being a lefty, obviously he's not, he's not Tarik Skubal.
Right.
But if you look ahead to that series and where there could be utility for Urania or Lauer out of the bullpen this series, Lauer's probably down for a couple days. I'd have Urania available out of the bullpen, line Lauer up, because you know he can give you length, and you get some of these tough lefties out of the Tigers lineup or make them hit lefty. Yeah. Lefty. That's how I'd be lining the week up right now. Obviously, a lot can change by Saturday.
That makes a lot of sense to me. My question is, before we take a break here, how much longer can we expect this 1-2 punch to work? It's not really like the Blue Jays have a number five starter who is ready to go. They kind of need to piece it together, but teams are going to start to make adjustments here.
Yeah, you don't really have a choice but to do it. Like, similar to the Easton Lucas thing, you do it until teams catch up to him. So Eric Lauer, you do it until teams catch up. Arena, you do it until teams catch up. It's like you said, Scherzer hasn't gotten a rehab game yet. Mako's far away. There's just nobody imminently there. Like, even if you made a move to AAA, yep, if we assume Jake Bloss is going to be down for a little bit, like, Jake Schultz is probably next man up. Andrew Bash, if you want some length and can clear a 40-man spot, there's nobody ready yet. So you got to hope that this can get through one more turn and then reevaluate, and then get through one more turn and then reevaluate. If you are reevaluating what your backyard looks like, we've got a backyard boost for listeners across the GTA, and it all starts with playing it safe before you dig. We're giving away a $100 home hardware gift card thanks to our friends at Ontario One Call to help you kick off your outdoor projects the right way. Before you plant a tree, build a fence, or put in that new pool, you've got to do one thing first. Click before you dig. Submit a locate request through Ontario One Call before digging for any size project. Text the code word click to dig to 590-590 for your chance to win a $100 home hardware gift card and make that backyard project a reality the safe way. Again, text click to dig to 590-590 for your shot to win. Standard message and data rates may apply. As a non-homeowner, that did not make a lot of sense to me. But as a former home hardware employee, love that we get to do a home hardware read. Also love that we get to talk to John Morosi about everything that happened in Major League Baseball around the weekend, including even more managerial firings. Let's take a break. John Morosi joins us on the other side as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I was informed of an error I made in the first segment when I said if the Jays needed extra length in the bullpen, the next name they'd called up would be Jake Schultz. Jake Schultz is working behind the glass for us. They would be calling up Paxton Schultz. My bad. Let's get a real professional in here to help this show out. Let's talk to John Morosi of MLB Network. John, how you doing today?
Outstanding, Blake and Julia. I always love to be on the show with you, especially when there are good things to be able to talk about with the Toronto Blue Jays. Here I thought when the invitation came before the weekend, it's going to be a tough series out there in Seattle, a really good ball club there with the Mariners, and then the offense is there for the Jays over three games there in Seattle.
Well, John, if you want to talk negative Toronto stuff instead of the Jays, we could talk about the Leafs. You're an NHL Network contributor,
we're
too.
We're good.
How are, look, obviously it's one series, and it doesn't mean a ton, but it does get the Jays back up to 500 in a year where no one's running away with the AL East. You know, checking in here with the Jays mid-May at 20-20, you feel a little better about them than we did maybe 2 weeks ago?
I do, because I still think that we have not yet seen the best from this lineup top to bottom, especially not at the very top. Like, there's still more there for Bo. There's more there for Vlad. I think certainly yesterday's game was a showcase of the Jays lineup depth. And you're getting contributions. Barger, of course, started in the first half of the lineup yesterday. I think collectively the bottom part, the more complementary bats of this team have really, I think, shown up in a big way. I've been really impressed with Miles Straw throughout. I think defensively we knew all along he'd be aces in the outfield, and I think now he's been even better than that offensively in terms of the contributions that he's had there. So it was a good day. I think when you consider the Jimenez injury, Santander not being available because of the shoulder issue that he encountered just prior to getting to Seattle, that was a really, I think a gritty, to use the hockey Stanley Cup playoffs terminology as you introduced, that's a bit of a gritty win over the weekend for the depth scoring, if you will, of the Blue Jays to have a really big, impactful way about them during those 3 days in Seattle against a team that's usually hard to score runs against and is typically a harder ballpark to score runs in. To score 21 runs over three games in Seattle and get that three-game sweep says a lot about where this team is. And I think, to me, Blake and Julia, a pretty powerful way to close the first quarter of the season.
Yeah, the competitive at-bats, right, up and down the lineup. And John, I am wondering, you know, how much – obviously, I know that you're a little bit everywhere, but how much you had seen from Addison Barger before this series and just, you know, how impressed you were with seeing him break out like that. We had sort of been expecting it. It finally came against the Mariners.
Yeah, Julia, it's a great point about Barger because I know this, and from talking to John Schneider, I remember even last year in spring training, John was saying a lot of things about Barger's tools and the belief that the Jays had, even going back that far, that Barger could be an impactful defender at multiple spots in the diamond, that they look at him as a premium athlete. And you don't always hear that about someone who's going to bat, certainly yesterday, in the third spot of your lineup that we talk about athleticism, but he has a lot of physical tools to play in different spots of your lineup defensively. And then I think there's always been the belief among the Jays hitting group, and perhaps with a different hitting coach, and certainly full credit to Dave Popkins for what he's done, I think working with this team early on this season, that you're getting a bit more of a polished approach out of him. Maybe part of it is he sees a clearer path to playing time and can settle in a bit more, but I like the way that John Schneider is utilizing him. I like the adjustments that he's made. I think he just looks a little more sure of himself now than he did a year ago. The numbers for me last year never really lined up with how talented of a player he is. And I think now we're starting to see that better swing decision. He's driving the ball more. And I think we've gotten, obviously we're a couple minutes into the conversation and we haven't yet mentioned the impact that a productive George Springer has on everybody. You know, he is in a lot of ways, and I remember this from covering him in Houston for a long time too, just through playoff games and big games that he was a part of. He was someone that team in Houston really went to and sought his advice and his presence. He carries himself with a real professionalism. And it's hard, I think, when you're an accomplished player, he's been a World Series MVP, when you struggle the way that he did a year ago, it's hard to be that same leader when you yourself are struggling. That's just a normal human thing. And now you see the way that George is playing. And I would expect, and not having certainly been in the Jays clubhouse every day of the season, but I would imagine that the players around George and the production that you were seeing from them could in part be because of the atmosphere that's been set there. And yes, a new hitting coach has a lot to do with it. Yes, the manager has a lot to do with that. But I think George Springer and the adjustments he has made, getting into deeper counts, driving the ball a bit more, trusting himself, those are things that there's a certain humility and leadership that we're seeing from George now that I believe is having a really big impact on the rest of the group.
We'll also get to see a George Springer football jersey giveaway in the coming days here, too. So everyone can, not just the clubhouse, everyone.
Go UConn Huskies.
Everyone, there you go. And Hartford, a big Hartford Whalers guy yes. To scratch your hockey itch there. So, John, Jay's back to 2020, 500. That's great. You know, normally we try to not look too deeply until Memorial Day, right? Like, that's kind of the rule of thumb we all use. There are three teams that early on here disagreed with that. We've seen three managers get fired in the last week and change. Texas Rangers, not a manager change, but a hitting coach change the other week. And then the Pirates go ahead and make a change there. And then the Rockies remove Bud Black over the weekend. Now, with the Rockies and Pirates, it's kind of fascinating. We've already heard a couple managers and other people around baseball come out in support of Bud Black and kind of point the finger at the entire operation there in Colorado. And we've certainly heard that same kind of chatter about, you know, Pittsburgh Pirates from the ownership level and the fans kind of pushing back there. What do you make of those two teams? Yeah, off to terrible starts, but Bud Black losing the job in particular in Colorado when the problems probably run a little deeper than the manager's chair.
It was not Derek Shelton's fault, and it was not Bud Black's fault, period. Let's start the conversation there. You're right on, Blake, that firing the manager will not really solve either issue. I think in the case of Don Kelly, whom the Pirates hired, speaking on the positive side of both Don and Warren Schaefer, Don is a Pittsburgh guy, grew up there, brother-in-law of Neil Walker, a longtime Pirate, Don's coach in the major leagues for a long time. He's been preparing for this job for a long time. And so I think Don Kelly will do as good of a job as anyone could expect as the manager of the Pirates. And similarly, Warren Schaefer with the Rockies, a young manager, 40 years of age, was drafted as an organizational player in some ways in the minor leagues. He played 4 years at Virginia Tech. He was a late-round pick. He grinded his way through the minor leagues. He became a very valued coach and manager in that organization, and then he got promoted to the major league staff. These are all, I'm happy for both of them. But the results both ways, Pirates, Rockies, will not really change until there is change in how they go about running their teams. I'm not saying that they have to necessarily change everybody in the front office, because that's not what I'm advocating at all. But operationally, they're not giving themselves the best opportunity to win. And especially the Rockies, my goodness. In that division, I was actually asked this question yesterday about how long will the White Sox, quote unquote, reign supreme as the worst team in the modern era, and maybe a year, Julia and Blake, maybe, because you look at the NL West, and I realize it's more of a balanced schedule now. You're not in your division quite as often, but we know this: the National League has had an inflow of talent in the last couple of years, and even within that league, the NL West is especially difficult just based on the quality of teams. The D-backs are about as good of a fourth-place team as you're going to find anywhere, in my opinion. So there's a very difficult road ahead for the Rockies. It's a hard place to pitch. Playing at altitude takes a lot out of your body, even in the best of times. And I would have to imagine mentally it's a real grind now when you're that far out of it that early in the year. So I think that the question, Blake, is framed very well. They need to make better decisions in the draft. They've got to make better decisions with the assets they've got at the major league level. And then similarly, the Pirates, you've got Paul Skeens. You're never going to be in as favorable of a position with respect to young, inexpensive talent as you are right now. So if you're ever going to go for it, go for it. This is the time to do it if you're the Pittsburgh Pirates. So hopefully there's a bit of an awakening with the way they're running the club, and the same thing with the Rockies. Maybe there's going to be a change in the next CBA and how some of the lower spending teams handle their business. But both of these teams need to make better decisions generally with their roster, with their overall operation. I agree. For the current managers now, for Don Kelly and Warren Schaefer to be in a better situation to succeed. And meanwhile, Derek Shelton, Bud Black, two of the best baseball people I've met in my career covering baseball, and certainly they, I hope, will go on to great things now that they have a different role and a little freedom now here in the days and weeks ahead.
John, over in the AL West, another team trying to maybe make a little bit better decisions are the Texas Rangers, hiring a new hitting coach in Brett Boone. And as I understand it, I think you shared this on MLB Network, Aaron Boone scooped you with the news. I know it was a few days ago, but kind of rare to have that sort of interaction with a major league manager, no?
Yeah, Julie, it was pretty funny. So, and as a quick parenthetical, I go pretty far back with Brett. I actually covered him with the Mariners 20 years ago in my time as a newspaper person, back with the late Seattle Post-Intelligencer. So I was around there for Brett's career. But the funny part about the story was we were at Yankee Stadium this past week. We had two showcase games on MLB Network, Padres, Yankees. And after our meeting on Monday, our normal production meeting with the manager, I was leaving Aaron's office, and as on my way out, he said, "Hey, JP, what do you got on the Rangers hitting coach search?" And I said, "I don't know." I mentioned Michael Young's name. I said, "Could be one of their former Rangers who lives in the area or has a connection to the franchise." I just sort of offered a couple of guesses. I said, "I don't know. What are you hearing?" And Aaron just has this smile, right? And he understands, you know, we certainly worked together through the media when he was at ESPN, so I've known Aaron for a long time, and he understands what we all do. And he looks at me and says, "Hey, well, I don't know. I've heard a couple things, but when you get the word on who it is, just let me know. Send me a text. I'll give you some feedback." So we're now probably like an hour before the first pitch. It's like 6 o'clock Eastern, and the announcement comes through. The Rangers have now hired Brett Boone as their new hitting coach. And I looked at my phone. I said, come on, Aaron. And so I just texted Boone. I said, quote, "Let me know what you think when it's official," end quote. And Aaron just responds with the laughing emoji. So it's it was pretty funny. It got me a good laugh. I told the story on the air. And it was funny because Aaron, of course, knew all along. I said, hey, you could have given me a scoop. I would. It's not like it would have changed what was happening here. I was in your office, for crying out loud. And so it was kind of funny. Aaron Boone got the scoop. Boone got the scoop over me, probably not for the first time, probably not for the last time either, but it was it made for a pretty unique way of unveiling the news.
That's great. And you'll get probably get the chat with Brett this week, because the MLB Network Showcase game is Rangers Astros.
You so got it.
We'll get a good look at that. On the Astros front, so the AL West is fascinating. The Rangers obviously do that because they are trying to win right now. The Mariners were the hottest team in the league until the Blue Jays went in there and swept. And then the Astros are kind of hanging around. And you made a point on Threads the other day, and I hadn't been on Threads in forever, but this is how much I value your opinion. I went on Threads to see it. But your appreciation for star players who change positions because of team need and things like that. And the Astros are fascinating because Jose Altuve has not only moved from second base to playing left field a little bit more, he has volunteered his spot in the batting order for Jeremy Peña. I know he was a little banged up over the weekend. Hopefully we get to see him in the MLB Network Showcase game. But what does that tell you about a guy like Altuve, and why do you have an extra appreciation for the star players who are willing to make those kind of moves?
I think it's one of those things, Blake, that impacts a player's legacy and how they're viewed. And certainly we've been thinking about this topic a lot in the context of Rafael Devers. Maybe we'll get into that here in a few minutes. But I am someone fully understanding what transpired with the Astros in 2017. I get it. I understand, I suppose, on some level why Altuve is booed. I think he, to an unfair extent, has had to bear the brunt of it because he is still an Astro. He is still there. There may be Blue Jays fans who didn't love the 2017 Astros. They're not going to boo Springer, just like the Red Sox are not. The Red Sox fans are not going to boo Alex Bregman. Okay, there's a little bit of a shift in perspective that is just human nature, even though it doesn't really sit that well with me about how Altuve is treated. Yeah, there were certainly mistakes made. I get that, but I think it's important to view the player in full, and the player in full is an extraordinarily productive player who has made numerous selfless decisions. And when you've got a franchise player who says, I will give up my role to make our team better or to help one of my teammates perform at his best, it resonates well with the audience that matters most, which is the people that are in the clubhouse. And he can get booed at Yankee Stadium forever and probably will, but the players in the clubhouse know what Altuve has done and know what that means to his team. And as flawed as they are right now, who's going to ever be surprised if the Astros find their way back to the playoffs? They do it every single year, it seems, no matter how many issues they encounter along the way. And you look at their roster, go back and compare the 2017 World Series team and who's still there. It's him. It's Altuve. And he's been the thread that has kept going. And I mentioned in the same post, and I actually talked about it earlier today on MLB Network as well, Craig Biggio moved positions twice. Mookie Betts in the last year moved positions twice. Right field to second base, second to short, and back to second base. He's moved all over the place. It does a lot for a player's legacy. And part of the reason why Craig Biggio is a Hall of Famer is the versatility. There was a year where, and Jays fans will remember this, when Toronto and Cleveland traded and Josh Donaldson went from Toronto to Cleveland, the only reason that deal could happen is that Jose Ramirez moved from third base to second base to clear spot for Josh Donaldson, who, as you remember back that year, had barely even played for the Toronto Blue Jays. But he made a spot, and Jose said, yes, it's for the betterment of my team. That, to me, stands out in a powerful way. I actually bumped up Ramirez and my MVP ballot because of that, because I view that as being an essential part of his value to the team. So to the extent that any player, whether his name is Rafael Devers or anybody else, if you care about getting MVP awards or you care about going to the Hall of Fame, I vote for both of them. Mm-hmm. And I care about this thing. And I can only speak for myself and my perspective on this. It does, I think, impact the way a player is remembered in the long term.
Yeah, let's talk about Devers then, because that was, you know, maybe a little bit more of a bumpy move for him from third to full-time DH.
And you know, not the first base.
As Alex Bregman comes into the fold, seems to be doing better now. He's certainly swinging the bat better. But what did you make of that move, and you know, just how things went early on in the season for Devers?
Well, Julia, it's still an unfolding story. And that to me is the fascinating part of all this. And that you're right. There was the courtship. They ended up signing Bregman. And in fairness to the Red Sox and Alex Cora, Craig Breslow, Devers was not a statistically strong third baseman last year. You've got to be able to defend your position. And if you don't, you leave yourself vulnerable to switches like the one that we saw with Devers in the spring. Yes, he's got a long-term ironclad contract. I get it. Does he have to volunteer to move? No, he doesn't. But, again, Jose Ramirez did it. Altuve's done it. Biggio's done it. Betts has done it. Michael Young, in a very similar situation where his defense had regressed a little bit with Texas, Michael Young led the Rangers to a World Series. And here comes Adrian Beltre. And Michael Young's role changes the next year. He's a DH instead of, he was even part-time first base, then he became a DH as Mike Napoli improved. So there is precedent for really great players to have to humble themselves and move, which Devers reluctantly did at DH, but doesn't seem especially inclined to do it right now to play first base, even though there was a, could we call it a summit, where ownership flew down to KC to talk to Devers over the weekend. Now, and I want to speak positively about Rafi for this. He went out and had a great series. Huge day yesterday to get the Red Sox a series win. So he can clearly compartmentalize. He can clearly still hit. The distraction doesn't seem to be weighing on his mind at all, which is a good thing, by the way. It just creates a rather interesting dynamic within the room where, and I talked about this a bit earlier today on MLB Network. You think about Mookie Betts, and he humbled himself last year to switch positions twice. He said, listen, I'm going to make mistakes, but I'm going to work my way through this and go through the reps every day to get better at it. When your best player does that, to use the Stanley Cup playoffs analogy, when your best player is back-checking harder than everybody else, it's a good thing for the team. And that's what I'm waiting in some way for Devers to do. If he doesn't want to do it, he's not going to do it. But I do think that there's a reason why the Red Sox have invested so much time in talking with him. This is a beautiful swing, and he can swing like this if he's playing DH, first base, third base, anywhere. I get that. But I do think for the Red Sox at a time of need with Casas out for the rest of the season, I'm waiting a little bit for Devers to step up and do what Biggio, Young, Ramirez, Betts, and so many others have done for their teams in the past.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if it gets there because they also lost Romy Gonzalez, so they lost their backup plan at first base as
the backup
well.
Backup to the backup.
Yes, they could use it there. John, thanks so much for taking the time out this morning. Have a great time in Texas for the MLB Network Showcase game this week.
I appreciate it. I'll be watching the Leafs all week. They're going to bounce back. I know it was a tough game three, tough game four. I'm still a believer in the Leafs. Keep it going.
All right. John Morosi, more faith in the Toronto teams than I have. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
John Morosi, MLB Network and NHL Network. Jays are off tonight.
Right.
They then start a three set against the Rays. We don't have Rays probables yet. It's probably going to be Shane Boz, Ryan Pepiot, and Zach Littell. Berríos, Bassett, Gausman for the Jays, so you feel pretty good about that. And then we'll head into the Tigers on the weekend. Now, the Jays are back to 500. They are on a four-game winning streak. All the quotes yesterday, vibes good, things like that. However, multiple winning streaks and losing streaks already this year. You and I, this is the one area that we've been able to find out so far on the show that you and I disagree.
Yeah.
How are you feeling like momentum and vibes wise, given that last time we were in this spot emotionally, the rug got pulled out a little bit?
Yeah. Listen, this is what I have said before. This show would be a lot better if we actually liked each other.
Wow. Wow.
No, listen, vibes are important. Momentum is important. I don't think it's everything, but you are going to be more relaxed and more confident if you see that things are going well. The ball's actually dropping and finding grass instead of finding a glove. That's just human nature. It really is. I don't think it's everything. Again, you still have to show up and be focused and play and do your best, but way easier to do that when things are going well.
And in execution terms, you know, easier to trust that the guy behind you is going to pick up the hit if you draw a walk and things like that. When you see the proof of concept for four games in 100%. A row, hopefully five, six, seven games in a row. So that'll be fun to watch. Very fun to watch. 29 runs over the last four games. Spoiled. Now we're spoiled.
We are getting spoiled.
One game wasn't spoiled. Four games. They literally didn't do it all of last year. It is at least nice to nice to see the offense for a couple of days here. Hopefully it keeps rolling into Tuesday. Hopefully we get Alejandro Kirk and Anthony Santander updates tomorrow that are positive. We probably won't have them by showtime, but pregame with John Schneider, I'm sure we'll get a full update, maybe even some news on Jake Bloss. Side note, Julie had a piece in the Toronto Star on Ayami Sato. I have a piece up at sportsnet.ca on a new tweak to the MLB umpire CBA to allow visible tattoos. Check those things out. We will be back tomorrow with our pal Keegan, and we'll set up the Rays series. Have a wonderful Monday.